This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
can start. How about you, set 2 seconds? Right. Okay. Bismillah, alhamdulillah, salat, salam, ala rasulillah, ala alihi, ashabihi, wa man wala, thumma, amma, ba, to proceed. So, let's start our Qawad Fiqhiyya class. Today we are going over Al-Qawad Al-Far'iyya wa Tadbiqat, subsidiary maxims and applications for which Qaida? For the third Qaida. So, we're done with introductions. That was the first section. We said that we will have 4 sections. Introductions would be the first section. The major legal maxims would be the second section. And the major legal maxims are 5. And then the third section will be the minor legal maxims. And the last section, which is the fourth, will be al-dawabit al-fiqhiyya, or the legal regulators, controllers, regulators. Which are like, you know, sort of minor maxims. So subsidiary maxims and applications of la darar wa la dirar is the third maxim is la darar wa la dirar. There is no harm or reciprocation of harm, right? La darar wa la dirar. There is no harm or reciprocation of harm. Before we talk about the subsidiary maxims, I just want to tell you that this is a very important maxim, and it is a very comprehensive maxim, and it's actually the entire Sharia. So no doubt it encompasses the entire fiqh, because the entire fiqh is about jalb al-masalih, daf' al-mafasid. That's what fiqh is about. That's what the deen is about. The deen is about procuring benefits and repairing harms. And these benefits, if you think about it this way, you may think it's utilitarianism. It is utilitarianism. It's religious utilitarianism. The difference between religious utilitarianism and your good old utilitarianism is what? Is that we have basically different set of objectives. We have a different worldview, different outlook. So we have masalih diniyya, you know, spiritual benefits that we value in our religious utilitarianism. That does not basically hold water in your conventional sort of philosophical utilitarianism as a system of ethics. But so our religious utilitarianism says that all of the Sharia is meant to do 2 things for human beings: to bring about benefits, repel, and minimize harms. Now, this will encompass all areas of Sharia. So what is qisas about? Qisas, equal retribution. You know, وَلَكُمْ فِي الْقِصَاصِ حَيَاتٌ يَا أُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ. In equal retribution, you have basically life, you know. So it is death, you know, you sentence people to death so that the society can live, so that, you know, murder does not become prevalent in the society, so that the criminals may be deterred. So that's why Allah used the this sort of genius expression, وَلَكُمْ فِي الْقِصَاصِ حَيَاءٌ. In qisas, in equal retribution, there is life for you, life for the society, life for everyone else. The offender will die, but the society will live. So hudud, the idea of hudud also, the legal prescribed punishments to avert harm from societies. Compensations for damages, the Sharia legislated compensations for damages. Like in Egypt, they say, احنا ما بناخدش العوض, which means that we don't accept compensation for damages. No, the Sharia does accept compensation for damages. If you damage someone's property, you compensate them for the damage you caused. If you wound someone, you compensate them, and so on and so forth. Returning items for defects, you know, which is al-khiyar al-radd bil-aib. In sales, if you find a defect in your sort of merchandise, you could return it and argue that it is defective. options in sales in general, khiyarat in sales in general, to repel harm, annulling marriages. If someone marries someone and they have not told them about like a major problem, there are certain basically criteria for the annulment of marriages. There are some disagreements within the madhahib, but the concept itself is agreed upon. And why is it annulment versus divorce? Because, like, you know, you retain your rights, your financial rights. Repelling an aggressor, dafa sa'il is meant to avert harm. So even if you have to kill the aggressor, the physical aggressor, sa'il, you're licensed to repel harm. Shuf'a, that's the right to preemption. Isn't this about averting harm from the partners, co-owners? You know, the right of preemption, like if you co-own a property and your partner wants to sell, you have first dibs, or you are you have the right to preemption. That is because, you know, you decided to get into partnership with him, but now he's going to bring you another partner. Let's say you don't like the other partner. Let's say the other partner is, you know, not suitable to be in partnership with him or her. Then you have the right to preemption, to avert harm. Hajr, interdiction. This is to avert harm from the heirs and the creditors, someone who's in debt. The interdiction then will... may cause them a little bit of harm. But, you know, the greater harm will be caused to the heirs and the creditors if he squanders his wealth. Jihad itself, isn't a jihad meant to avert harm, deter harm from the religion and worldly affairs of the society? If people don't, you know, if people are not willing to sacrifice for anything, then they will be stepped on left and right, and no one will, you know, they will be oppressed, their property will be taken, their land will be taken, and they will suffer in their religious commitment and in their worldly affairs. They even stipulate the absence of harm in mubahat, you know, permissible acts. So, for instance, is it permissible to use contraceptive pills? Did they discuss this? Yes, they did. So it is, as long as they don't cause harm. So, in fact, in Kashaf al-Qina'a, it says, وَيَجُوز شُرْبِ دَوَاءٍ مُبَاحٍ لِقَطَعَ الْحَيْضِ مَعَ أَمْنِ الضَّرَرِ مَعَ أَمْنِ الضَّرَرِ. So it's permissible to drink a permissible medicine to prevent pregnancy if safety is assured, if there is no harm, or if safety is assured. So the same applies also with regard to, as in Kashaf al-Qina'a, they say that if she wants to bring about the period, like if she wants the period to come early, she's allowed to do that. Also, with that contingency is, there is no harm. Safety is assured. This applies to men as well. If they want to, stop it is not permissible, as they say in Kashaf, to sterilize the people, whether it's men or women. So sterilization procedures, unless it's medically indicated, unless, you know, the pregnancy will cause great harm to the person. So it's medically indicated, but if it's not medically indicated, then it's not permissible to sterilize. But temporary, transient prevention of pregnancy for men or women, they mention here like a drink of camphor, for instance. They believed that it, if men drink like a drink of camphor that will stop pregnancy. Anyway, I'm not quite sure, so don't try it. there are many applications. Ibn Rajab mentions many applications. The first application that Ibn Rajab mentions is digging a well, to dig a well next to a neighbor's well. If this causes the neighbor's well to dry up, if you're digging a well to drain the neighbor's well, even though you're digging the well in your property, so your neighbor has a well, and you come within your property and dig a well near your neighbor's well to drain the water from your neighbor's well. If it does do that, if it drains up your neighbor's well, they will fill your well. They will fill your well. You can't do that, even though it's on your property. And they here mentions here a report, a mursal from Abu Dawood. Mursal from Abu Dawood, Marasil Abu Dawood. Mursal in general, what is, you know, mursal in general is when the tabi'i reports from the Prophet ﷺ without mentioning the companion. When a follower, second generation, reports from the Prophet without mentioning the sahabi, the companion, first generation. That's called mursal. Marasil in general are controversial, whether they are acceptable or not. So some of the scholars feel that marasil should be acceptable. Hanafis and Malikis feel marasil should be acceptable. Shafi'is and Hanbalis don't feel that they're always acceptable. And the Shafi'i in particular, he had his formula to, you know, as for the marasil that would be acceptable. But in general, I just want you, when you hear mursal, you know, you tend to dismiss the mursal right away. It's not dismissed right away. There will be a discussion about it. So this mursal from Abu Dawood, the Prophet ﷺ said, لا تضاروا في الحفر. The Prophet ﷺ said, لا تضاروا في الحفر. Do not harm each other in digging. And then this was defined by, you know, in digging, defined by digging a well close to your neighbor's well to drain it. Now, causing harm to your neighbor's property by some form of disturbance, you know, like shaking or pounding within your own property, or even emitting foul smells within your own property. Anything that migrates from your property to your neighbor's property, whether it is shaking or foul smells or whatever, would be prevented from doing this within your own property to do what? Avert harm to your neighbor. He mentions here that Samura ibn Jundub. Samura ibn Jundub, he reports this about himself. That's the honesty of the Sahaba, radhiyallahu alayhim. If something is of benefit from the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they will report it even if it indicts them, even if it's not in their favor. So Samura ibn Jundub reports that, he had a tree inside the property of a man from Al-Ansar. Like, you could own a tree inside the property of someone. He owned the palm tree inside the property of a man from Al-Ansar. So he's coming in and out all the time, and the man gets annoyed by this because the man lives with his family on the property. So Samura keeps on coming in and out of the property to tend to his palm tree. So the man, you know, came and complained to the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam offered to Samura to sell it or to donate it, and Samura refused. And the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam eventually, when Samura refused every option, said to him, Anta mudar, you're causing harm. And he said to the Ansari, go ahead and uproot his tree. Uproot his tree. So anyway, and Samura is the one who reported this. And Imam Ahmad said in similar cases where harm is caused, people should be prevented from causing harm. So we have, you know, the prohibition of riba, the prohibition of gharar, excessive speculation, the prohibition of ihtikar, hoarding, monopoly, the prohibition of ghabn, even the prohibition of ghabn. You know, ghabn means what? Ghabn means iniquity, deception. So when you sell, when you have a haggler and you sell to them at a rate and a non-haggler and you sell to them at a different rate, is this allowable? Ahmad says, no, you can't really do this. You can't sell at two different rates to hagglers, negotiators, and non-negotiators, because that is harm to the non-haggler or the non-negotiator. Al-Mumakis wa ghayr al-Mumakis. So, and this is what? This is to prevent harm. Prevent harm from people who are, you know, not savvy. So in the 30th Qaida Sa'diyya, or Sa'di Maxim, he said, الشركاء في الأملاك والحقوق والمنافع يلزموا أو يلزموا الممتنع بما يعود على المشترك من الأمور الضرورية والمصارف والتعميرات وغيرها ويشتركون في زيادتها ونقصانها بحسب أملاكهم ومع الجهل بمقدار ما لكل منهم يتساوون. The translation for this would be partners in properties, rights, and benefits are obligated to bear the necessary expenses, maintenance, and other related costs that affect the shared entity. So you own a property. Something happens to this property and you need to do something. You will be compelled to participate with your partner in the expenses if this is necessary to bring about an essential benefit or repel harm. You're required. So like you share a building with, and this used to happen in Egypt a lot, you share a building and one of the co-owners wants to have an elevator. Are you required to participate? You may say no, you're not required, because this is not an essential benefit and it is not to repel harm. But if you share a wall with your neighbor, share a wall, and this wall falls down, are you compelled to rebuild the wall with your neighbor? Yes, you're compelled to rebuild the wall with your neighbor. Let's say he wants to have an elevator. In this case, the rule is you're not required to participate. However, you're not allowed to use the elevator until you participate. You're not allowed to use the elevator until you participate. And this is mentioned in Al-Qa'ida al-Rajabiyya 76, number 76. He says, owners of specific property or benefit, if they need to avert harm or maintain a benefit, one is compelled to agree with the other according to the correct view of the madhab. Another opinion states, if one can independently avert the harm, they should do so without compelling the other, if they can independently avert the harm. But this here, you cannot independently avert the harm. This is a shared wall between you. You will be compelled here to rebuild the wall with your neighbor. However, if the other wishes to benefit from what their partner has done, they can be prevented until they pay their share of the expenses. If they need to create a new benefit, there is no compulsion. There is no compulsion. So the example of the elevator, it's not an essential benefit. You know, we've been using the building for 2 years, for 3 years, for 20 years. Now we want an elevator. Okay, you know, you can have it. But I'm not going to participate. But if I don't participate, I don't use it until I participate. Okay. Now, let us, so this is just basically an introduction to the subsidiary maxims and the applications that we will discuss under the subsidiary maxims of القاعدة الثالثة, the third maxim, لا ضرر ولا ضرار. There should be no harm or reciprocation of harm. لا ضرر ولا ضرار. No harm and no reciprocation of harm. Okay, now we will have 10 قواعد to go over. 10 قواعد to go over. They will look to you the same, but they are different. And our job in the next couple of sessions will be to show the distinctions between those qawa'id, because there is qadr mushtarak, there is overlap, there is common degree and overlap between those qawa'id. They are all children of this qa'idah, la darar wa la darar. So it is expected that they will have some commonalities between them. And that just to have a bird's view of all the qawa'id, let's just write them all here. Darar yudfa biqadr al-imkan. Harm is to be repelled. Yudfa is different from yurfa. Yurfa has to be removed. Yudfa has to be repelled. So this is harm before it happens. It's to be repelled. Yudfa is different from yurfa. Yudfa would be, is to be repelled. Biqadr al-imkan, as much as possible. As much as possible. So harm is to be removed as much as possible. That's the first one. Then ad-darar yuzal or yurfa. Then ad-darar yuzal or yurfa. Darar is harm. Harm is to be removed. Here it already happened. You want to remove it. Then ad-darar la yuzalu bimithlihi. Ad-darar la yuzal bimithlihi. So harm is not to be removed by equal harm. Equal harm. Then ad-darar al-ashad yuzalu bil-akhaf. أو بالضرر الأخف. الضرر الأشد يزال بالضرر الأخف. الضرر is harm. أشد is greater or what? Yeah, greater. Greater harm is to be removed. To be removed by the lesser harm, or by a lesser harm, a lesser harm. So sometimes you cannot remove harm without harm. So in this case, we have two qawa'id. The first one that we mentioned is that you don't remove harm by equal harm. It's useless, like it's equal harm. So but you remove harm by a lesser harm, which is close to yukhtaru ahwan al-sharrayn. But there is a difference that we will show, inshallah, when we discuss them. Yukhtar, to be selected. Ahwan, the lesser, al-sharrayn of the two evils. The lesser of two evils is chosen. The lesser of two evils is chosen. Then, idha ta'aradat mafsadatan, this will be the next one. إذا تعارضت مفسدتان روعية أعظمهما ضررا بارتكاب ضررا بارتكاب أخف Fihima. So when mafsadatan, two conflicts, two evils, or two harms, ta'aradat, conflicted, either if ru'ya, considered, a'zamuhuma, the greater, darar, in harm, birtikab, by performing, or by what? Committing, akhafihima, the lesser. So when two harms conflict, the greater harm is mitigated by committing the lesser harm. Then يتحمل الضرر العام لدفع الضرر الخاص. يتحمل الضرر العام لدفع الضرر الخاص. يتحمل means what? To be tolerated. الضرر العام, public harm. لدفع, to repel. الضرر الخاص, private harm. So you prevent public harm, huh? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes, of course. Of course. It's the opposite. You repel public harm by tolerating private harm. You repel public harm by tolerating private harm. If you have to basically make a road and it has to go through a residential area and you really need to, you can tolerate private harm, but in this case, you will have to compensate the people, and that is something that we will, بقدر الإمكان, we will talk about, you know, compensation here. Then the next one is the next one is دار المفاسد. دار المفاسد أولى من جلب المنافع. دار المفاسد أولى من جلب المنافع. So, دار is to repel. مفاسد, harms or evils. Corruption, I guess. أولى takes precedence. من جلب, from procuring benefit. So, to translate this, repelling harm takes precedence over bringing benefits. Like those of you who practice medicine, don't they teach you first to do no harm? First to do no harm. Then the next one, إذا تعارض المانع والمقتضي يقدم المانع إلا إذا كان المقتضي أعظم. But keep in mind, دار المفاسد أولى من جلب المنافع. We will have a contingency that we will address when we come to talk about this principle, which is a very important contingency. We're presuming here that the mafsada and manfa'a are of equal significance. But sometimes, they're not of equal significance. Therefore, this qaida does not always apply. So you don't repel, you don't basically forego a great benefit to avoid a small harm. No, you tolerate the small harm to procure a great benefit. Okay. Then, إذا تعارض المانع والمقتضي يقدم المانع إلا إذا كان المقتضي أعظم, which means when a cause for action and a cause for abstention conflict, which one will you give precedence to, cause for action or cause for abstention? Abstention. You know, يقدم المانع إلا إذا كان المقتضي أعظم, except if the cause for action is of greater significance. The final one is من أتلف شيئا لينتفع به ضمنه ومن أتلفه دفعا لمضراته فلا ضمان عليه. Whoever destroys something for personal benefit is liable, but if destroyed to avert harm, there is no liability. There is no liability. Whoever destroys something to avert harm. So, like, a camel attacks you and you kill the camel. Are you liable? No. But you find the camel and you're so hungry, like, muttar, to eat it, and you eat it. Are you liable? Yes. You're liable for what? You're not sinful. You're liable for compensation. So you have to compensate. In the first case, do you have to compensate? No. Camel attacks you. You kill the camel. No compensation. You eat the camel because you're hungry. You compensate. Are you sinful? No, you're not sinful because you're muttar. Okay. Now, so let's take al-qaida, qaida al-darar yudfa biqadr al-imkan. Harm is to be repelled as much as possible. Harm is to be repelled as much as possible. So what do we mean by harm is to be repelled as much as possible? It means that as much as possible refers to what? Refers to harm or refers to the means by which you repel the harm? Refers to both. So as meaning what? All harm is to be prevented, but if you cannot, then you minimize it. So, because many times you can't repel or remove all harm. So in this case, your obligation would be to minimize it. And harm is to be repelled as much as possible. As much as possible also refers to the means by which you repel the harm. Whatever means possible, lawful, possible means you have, you use them to repel the harm. So examples of repelling harm as much as possible. Jihad is one of them. Equal retribution is one of them. Hudud would be one of them. And we said the physical aggressor, we have the right to push away the physical aggressor, but which is the as-sa'il. That physical aggressor is sa'il, the person who's assaulting you, attacking you. They say clearly that if he will desist by like sort of verbal warnings, you're not allowed to strike them. You're not allowed to hit them. If speech will suffice, you're not allowed to strike. And if striking by a stick suffices, you're not allowed to strike by a sword. And if striking by a sword, like the way they do this, like the way you should basically arrest a criminal, if you have to shoot them, you shoot them in the leg. You don't shoot them in the heart. So you shoot them in the leg to basically restrain them and so on. So you try to do this as much as you can. We're talking here about al-dafa or al-rafa. We're talking about al-dafa, al-darar yudfa biqadr al-imkan. Harm is to be repelled, not removed. We're presuming here, this is the first qaida. So we're going like in a chronological manner. We're presuming the darar has not occurred yet, but you're trying to repel the harm before it occurs. Yudfa biqadr al-imkan. And should we always seek to repel it before it happens? Of course, because they say al-daf'u khayrun wa aysar min al-rafa. Al-daf'u khayrun wa aysar min al-rafa. Daf'u is to repel the harm. Is always easier and better than rafa, which is to remove the harm. Because once the harm occurs, you know, it would be more costly, more costly. So if we have means to prevent, you know, rulers from tyranny, it will be much less costly than to basically remove them afterwards. So that's the physical aggressor part, the application of the physical aggressor. There is the application of a shuf'a also. Shuf'a is basically the right to preemption. That is to repel harm. But in the shuf'a, whatever it is that, price you get from the market, I will have to honor that price. So I can't tell you I have the right to preemption, then sell me your part at whatever price I determine. I will have to basically honor the prices in the market that you will be getting. Zakah may be delayed if you expect harm. If you need the money for your sustenance and it is zakat due date, you have your zakat due date today. Zakat due date is today, and you have $2,000 in zakat. But you have in 2 weeks to pay your rent, and you will not have the money for your rent. Do you wait? You wait. You defer your zakat payment, and you pay your rent. Okay, because that would be harm. Sadaqah is a testament of one's faith. Sadaqah is a burhan in Islam. Disambiguation or? And until there is no harm. There is no harm. Sadaqah is extremely important in Islam. However, could you be sinful in giving sadaqah? Yes. If your family needs it, you're sinful. So in Egypt, they say, اللي يحتاج البيت يحرم على الجامع. But that's not always, accurate. Whatever your household needs is haram for the mosque, haram to give to the mosque. Anyway, but that's the concept anyway. And many of these, many of the common wisdoms that they have in Muslim countries should not be dismissed because they have some roots. So you should not dismiss them. You should not accept them without thought, and you should not dismiss them without thought. Some often they are distorted. They're just corrupted, but they still have some justification. Okay, so. Now, given it would be sinful if it results in neglecting the sustenance of one's dependent, harming oneself or one's creditors or one's guarantor, if you borrow money and you go out and give charity and give gifts and to people, no, please pay your creditor back before you go out and act charitable and, generous. And the same applies to the guarantor. So if someone guarantees, like if you borrow money and someone guarantees payment on your behalf and you go out and give charity, this can cause harm to your guarantor, because if you're unable to pay, they will be required to pay in your place. So you don't do that. You basically don't put your guarantor in, cause harm to your guarantor. That's why they say, وَمَنْ تَصَدَّقَ بِمَا يَنْقُصُ مَأُونَةً تَلْزَمُهُ كَمَأُونَةِ زَوْجَ أَوْ قَرِيبٍ أَثِيمَ لِحَدِيثِ كَفَى بِالْمَرْءِ إِثْمًا أَنْ يُضَيَّعَ مَنْ يَقُوتُ. It's, they cite here the hadith of, it's enough sin for a man to neglect those under his care or to neglect his dependents. Then, إِلَّا أَنْ يُوَافِقَهُ وَعِيَالُهُ عَلَى الْإِيثَارِ فَهُوَ أَفْضَلُ لقوله تعالى ويؤثرون على أنفسهم ولو كان به خصاصة. Unless your family members agree with you, on ithar, basically altruism. This altruism. If you have little and you donate the little that you have, if everybody is on board and they agree with you, then you can do that. Like your family members are happy with donating to the neighbor, even though they need it themselves, then you're allowed to do this, because in this case, it will be their consent, based on their consent. He says it's disliked for a pregnant or a nursing woman to fast if they fear harm to themselves or their child. It is disliked for a pregnant woman, so. Our religion is very sensible and very balanced, very moderate, and it doesn't really appreciate extremism, but it also does not appreciate thoughtlessness. It is not meant to be a suicidal pact. It is meant to procure benefits for the people and repel harms. So if someone feels, you know, if like a woman feels, no, I will be able to do it, and she causes harm, you know, she's breastfeeding, for instance, and she's seeing that her milk is diminishing because she insists to fast, then that's disliked. That's not heroic or anything. That's just, you know, bad religiosity. Then a muttar is permitted to consume someone else's property to preserve their life, but they are liable, as we said, because we said yudfa biqadr al-imkan. So we did repel it biqadr al-imkan. You can eat that camel, or you can eat that sheep. So we did repel harm from you, but qadr al-imkan does not mean that you're not liable financially. You should be liable. It's impermissible for the ruler to appoint, you know, this is a good example also. It's impermissible for the ruler to appoint a corrupt individual to oversee an orphan's property. If you have an orphan and you need to have a manager for the property, can the ruler appoint a corrupt individual, a fasiq, to manage the orphan's property? Of course not. It's not allowed. What if the endower, al-waqif, appoints a fasiq individual, appoints a corrupt individual? So al-waqif is the one who had the property and is the one who made the endowment. Should we respect the wishes of al-waqif, the donor? It's his money. Yes, you should. But then, if he puts this endowment in the name of an orphan, his child, for instance, he dies, and he makes an endowment for his, and he appoints someone who is wicked. What are we going to do now? Are we going to respect his wishes because it's his money? Or are we going to take care of, you know, give precedence to the right of the orphan? We're going to try to do both, because that is the meaning of biqadr al-imkan, as much as possible. As much as possible here, I want to honor the right of the endower, and I want to prevent or avert harm from the orphan. So what they say here is, you keep him and you add an overseer. Keep the manager and add an overseer. Or sometimes also someone can appoint a person and they become wicked. They were righteous, they become wicked. In this case, keep them, add an overseer, so that you honor the right, you know, of the endower. So the final thing under this qa'ada is, it's disliked for someone who cannot endure hardship or is unaccustomed to it to reduce provisions below his needs, to reduce his provisions below his needs, or their provisions below their needs. Like, you know, most of the, like, you're not Abu Bakr to donate all of your money, and you're not Umar to donate half of your money. Most of the time, people who do these things, they get, like, excited, and they do things of that nature, and they are not there yet, they become regretful afterwards. They become regretful afterwards. So there is a statement here from Ma'unat Ulinnuha that's very beautiful. So maybe I will read parts of it, because it's very powerful, very beautiful. He says, وَكُرِهَ لِمَنْ لَا صَبْرَ لَهُ. This is one of the Mu'tamad books of the Hanbali Madhab. وَكُرِهَ لِمَنْ لَا صَبْرَ لَهُ عَلَى الضِّيقِ أَوْ لَا عَادَةَ لَهُ عَلَى الضِّيقِ أَنْ يَنْقُصَ نَفْسَهُ عَنِ الْكِفَايَةِ التَّامَّةِ نَصَّ عَلَيْهِ. It's disliked for someone who cannot endure hardship or is unaccustomed to hardship to reduce their provisions below what is sufficient for their needs. نَصَّ عَلَيْهِ means what? explicitly stated by Imam Ahmad. When they say Nassa alayhi, it means explicitly stated by Imam Ahmad. Did they allow him to borrow money to give a gift for his... But Imam Ahmad allowed him to borrow money to give a gift to a relative on their wedding. So Imam Ibn Taymiyyah said, this shows that borrowing for Silat al-Rahim, to join one's kin, is permissible, according to Imam Ahmad. And certainly, you're borrowing money that you will be able to pay back. But, you know, if you feel altruistic and charitable and you feel that your family member is having a wedding tomorrow and you borrow a little bit of money to buy them a gift, then that's not a big deal. That's not a problem. Ibn Aqil said, you know, Ibn Aqil is one of the finest Hanbalis in terms of, certainly Ibn Aqil had his issues with Aqidah matters and issues of that nature, but Ibn Aqil was a genius, a very brilliant Hanbali and a very prolific writer, an extremely prolific writer, maybe one of the most prolific in our history. So Ibn Aqil says, by Allah, أقسم بالله لو عبس الزمان في وجهك مرة لعبس في وجهك أهلك وجيرانك. By Allah, if difficult times frown upon you once, your own family and neighbors will frown upon you. So he's saying that you try to keep some of your money, because if hard times frown upon you once, your family and neighbors will always frown upon you. Then he also quoted Ibn al-Jawzi in his book Sirr al-Masoon. He says, Ibn al-Jawzi says, الأولى أن يدخر لحاجة تعرض وأنه قد يتفق له مرفق فيخرج ما في يده فينقطع مرفقه فيلاقي من الضراء والذل ما يكون الموت دونه فلا ينبغي لعاقل أن يعمل بمقتضى الحال الحاضرة. So he said, قد يتفق له مرفق فيخرج ما في يده. قد يتفق له مرفق فيخرج ما في يده. It's better to save for an unforeseen need, as it may happen that a person has a source of income for a period of time. So they expend their wealth, and then that source of income is interrupted, leaving them to face hardship and humiliation worse than death itself. Therefore, it's unwise for a rational person to act based solely on present circumstances. And then he said, وَقَدْ تَزَهَدَ خَلْقٌ كَثِيرٌ فَأَخْرَجُوا مَا بِأَيْدِيهِمْ ثُمَّ احْتَاجُوا فَدَخَلُوا فِي مَكْرُوهَاتٍ وَالْحَازِمُ مَنْ يَحْفَظُ مَا فِي يَدِهِ وَالْإِمْسَاكُ فِي حَقِّ الْكَرِيمِ جِهَادٍ كَمَا أَنَّ إِخْرَاجَ مَا فِي يَدِ الْبَخِيلِ جِهَادٍ وَالْحَاجَةُ تُحْوِجُ إِلَى كُلِّ مِحْنَةٍ. He further remarked, many individuals embraced asceticism, giving away all they owned, only to later fall into need, resorting to disliked practices. So after they gave up their wealth, they became poor, and then they resorted to suboptimal and disliked practices, things that are not completely wholesome, to recoup. So he says, the prudent person preserves what they have, and restraint in a generous person is a form of striving, just as spending for a miser is a form of striving. Need leads to all forms of hardship. Then he quotes Bishr al-Hafi, who says, لو أن لي دجاجة أعولها خفت أن أكون عشارا على الجسر. If I had a single chicken to support, I would fear being a toll collector on the bridge. Thawri, that's Sufyan al-Thawri, said, من كان بيده مال فليجعله في قرن ثور فإنه زمان من احتاج فيه كان أول ما يبذل دينه أو كان أول ما يبذل دينه. Sufyan al-Thawri said, If someone has wealth, they should tie it to the horn of an ox. For this is an era in which when a person falls into need, the first thing they sacrifice is their religion. The first thing they sacrifice is their religion. So if you have money to protect you from sacrificing your religion, don't give it up all and then sacrifice your religion. Then get into suboptimal and disliked practices or even outright haram practices. Anyway, so these are just like some of the wisdoms of some of the great scholars in this regard. That is not basically to condone miserliness or to encourage stinginess. Of course not. But that is to act with prudence so that you don't befall yourself into hardship. And then if you fall into hardship, you have no guarantee. You don't know how you will be like when in times of need. So you don't put yourself in a fitna, in a trial, and then test yourself. Don't try to test yourself because oftentimes people fail. The second qaida here is ad-darar yuzal. Harm must be removed. Harm must be removed. The first one, the first subsidiary maxim was to be repelled. Harm did not occur yet. You're trying to repel it before it occurs. The second one is ad-darar yuzal. Harm must be removed. So if harm cannot be prevented and it occurs, efforts must be directed toward removing it. There are so many applications. You know, as we said, compensations for destroyed property, that is removal after harm occurred. Options in sales, that's removal after harm has occurred. To remove harmful structures, such as gutters and canopies. So like sabat is a canopy that they use, like if this is a pathway and this is your wall, this is a neighbor's wall, and there is a pathway between your wall and your neighbor's wall. And you decide to build a canopy here, it's called sabat. You decide to build a canopy. If this canopy is low enough that it causes inconvenience to the pedestrians, you have to deconstruct it. You have to remove the canopy. If you have a gutter that is basically pouring water on people, you will be forced to remove your gutter. What if the pathway is low, and over time, you know, like accumulation of dust or whatever, the pathway becomes higher, and then the canopy is causing nuisance and inconvenience to the pedestrians. But when you built it, it was fine. It met the code, whatever. It was high enough. You will still be forced to remove it because there is now harm. Harm has to be removed. Harm has to be removed. Another example, if you begin a prayer with an imam and the imam prolongs the prayer and he will cause you harm, you know, You're getting really tired. You have a train to catch, whatever it is, and the imam is prolonging the prayer beyond what's customary. Are you allowed to separate and finish your prayer? Yes, you are allowed to separate from the congregation and finish your prayer so that you could catch work, catch your train, etc. And this will not invalidate your prayer. If someone borrows coins, this is a good example here. We'll make this the final example in this session. If someone, don't overdo it, like don't be doing this tomorrow in the masjid and just make a scene. But if someone borrows fulus, coins, and then, you know, he says fulus and he doesn't say, you know, money in general, because gold and silver cannot be prohibited. The circulation of gold and silver cannot be prohibited by the Sultan. But fulus, like the ones that we have nowadays, these are called fulus. So they have coins that are not gold and silver that, you know, were used as currency. Not gold currency, not silver currency. Now, if the Sultan decided to stop the circulation, prohibit the circulation of a particular coin, particular currency, you borrowed money. You borrowed, let's say, 100 of those coins. 100 coins. The Sultan basically stopped the circulation of those coins. This is payment time. Payment time. You have the 100 coins. The very 100. You have 100 coins. And in general, the rule is for payment al-mithl, the exact same, not in value, but the exact same property that you borrowed. If you return it the exact same al-mithl, then that's fine. But the Sultan prohibited the circulation. So if you pay this the exact same back, the creditor, the lender, well, you know, that would be a big loss for the lender. So what do we do here? We say the value. We say the value. The value of the 100 coins. Now, can you apply the same thing? Apply the same thing nowadays with the depreciation of currency. Like you borrow 100 Egyptian pounds, and then it gets devalued a lot. Devalued a lot. Now the Sultan did not prohibit the circulation, but it became quite devalued. It's time for you to pay. The Hanbalis will say, "You pay al-mithl. You pay the same 100. They don't care about the devaluation of the currency. They don't care about the devaluation of the currency. Kasad or devaluation of the currency. Who cares about devaluation of the currency? In case of, you know, we're not talking about just simple devaluation. We're talking about a currency that lost like 95% of its value. Like a huge sort of devaluation, depreciation of the value. The two disciples of Imam Abu Hanifa, they said he is required to pay the value, not the exact same. And that is the position that the Assembly of Muslim Jurists of America takes nowadays. When you have extreme devaluation, when you have extreme devaluation of currency, whether it was mu'akhar sadaq, deferred dowry, whether it was like a loan, whatever it is, then we say that there will be an arbitration committee to get to like sort of to find a point of compromise, like, you know, that will honor the right of the lender and the right of the borrower. So we will not basically completely dismiss the devaluation of the currency, but we're talking here about scenarios where there is severe devaluation of currency. That's it. And why are we doing this? To repel harm, you know, to, you know, remove harm from the creditor, from the lender. كل قولي هذا استغفر الله لي ولكم سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت استغفرك واتوب اليك
tonight Sheikh Jafar Gilani came back from Sudan and he mentioned I didn't know this one